ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो विष्णुवराय कृष्णप्रसाद बुद्धदे श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामीजी नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्येश तारणे श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसिंधु गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 51, verse 54. Mane mam anugraha ishate krato Raja anubandha bhava goya rikshaya Ya pratyate sarubir ekachaya Ya Vanam vikshad bir akhanda bhumi pai.
Manye mama anugraha ishate krito. Raja anubandha bhagavo yat vichaya. Yapratyate sadhu vireka chajya. Yapratyate sadhu vireka chajya.
You, Krita, Dan, Raja, to kingdom, Anubandha, of attachment, Apagama, removal, Yadrachaya, spontaneous, Ya, which, Pratyate, is prayed for, Sadhu B, saintly, Ekachayaya, in solitude, vanam, the forest, evikshadbi, who desire to enter, akanda, unlimited, bhumi, of lands, i.e., by rulers. Translation, my lord, I think you have shown me mercy since my attachment to my kingdom has spontaneously ceased. Such freedom is prayed for by saintly rulers of vast empires who desire to enter the forest for a life of solitude. O powerful one, I desire no boon other than service to your lotus feet, the boon most eagerly sought by those free of material desire. O Hari, what enlightened person who worships you, the giver of liberation, would choose a boon that causes his own bondage? Therefore, the Lord offered Mukshukunda anything he desired, but Mukshukunda desired only the Lord. This is dear Krishna consciousness. Therefore, O Lord, having put aside all objects of material desire, which are bound to the modes of passion, ignorance, and goodness, I am approaching you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for shelter. You are not covered by mundane designations. Rather, you are the Supreme Absolute Truth, pure, full and pure knowledge and transcendental to the material modes. Purport, the word nirgunam here indicates that the Lord's existence is beyond the qualities of material nature. One might argue that the Lord's body is made of material nature, but here the word advayam refutes the argument. There is no duality in the Lord's existence. His eternal spiritual body is Krishna, and Krishna is God. So we see in these verses how Muchukunda is, firstly, is described the attachment that people have for material objects, and of course, as a king, is probably more excessive because the king has more temptation with ability to enjoy more because of wealth and power and fame and whatnot. So he identifies himself with such persons who are in a miserable position of completely falling into the dark well or the blind well of material life. And then in the previous verse, he talked about that when we are when we stop this material life, then we get mercy of devotees, then we begin devotional service. And then there was the whole commentary on, well, actually it doesn't mean that because it's the opposite. You get association of devotees, then you stop your material existence. But then we see in this verse, for instance, and in the next verse also, he says, now that my attachments are gone, then you have your mercy on me. Because it's mercy, because I'm detached, I get this mercy. And then in the next verse also, similarly, people who are free from material desire develop attraction to you. So there is some idea that detachment from material life leads to attraction to the Lord. It can happen, that's true. But as the Acharyas have pointed out, actually we should think of it in the opposite way, that we get association of devotees, we develop bhakti, and then we get rid of our material entanglement. So that, of course, is true, because we see that process of bhakti is one klesha-agni. That's the first symptom of bhakti. We do bhakti, and it eliminates suffering. And suffering consists of karmas, happiness and distress. So if we're enjoying nicely, we do bhakti, it destroys that. And if we're suffering, it destroys that also. It destroys the desires, which are the cause of the bondage, or the activities and the karmas, and it destroys ignorance also, avidya, which is the cause of the desires. So all of this is destroyed by the process of bhakti. So it's not that first we have to destroy our material bondage, and then we take to the worship of the Lord. First we become yogis and gyanis and get liberation, then we take to bhakti. Actually the opposite way around. Bhakti does the same thing. However, we do know that that we have a process of karma yoga, jnana yoga, astanga yoga, and then bhakti yoga. First, we're qualified by karma yoga because we're so attached to material things. And the Lord allows us to get our artha and our kama by following dharma. And when we're purified after many births, then we rise to sattva. Then we're qualified for jnana and yoga. And then when we're fixed in detachment from the material world, as is mentioned here, then we can take to bhakti. So there's that type of attitude is there, view is also there in the scriptures, even in Bhagavad Gita. But we also know that not every jnani or yogi takes to bhakti. And in fact, it's the opposite. And we see in Bhagavatam, it also says qualification for bhakti is quoted in Nectar Devotion. Also, qualification is not too much material attachment and not too much detachment. We become very detached due to yoga and jnana, and then we're not attracted to bhakti at all. We end up going into impersonal Brahman instead and doing tapasyas and meditating on Brahman. And if we're too attached, obviously, then we'll just stick to the karma yoga and try to get our desires that way. So, in other words, becoming too detached also is not a qualification for bhakti. So, therefore, the acharyas explain that the qualification is not that we've destroyed our material attachments and then we automatically somehow get mercy of devotees and whatever. Rather, the sequence is that whatever position we're in, attached or unattached, if we get the mercy of devotees, then we can take to the process of bhakti. So even if we become a gyani and yogi and we don't get the mercy of devotees, fine, then we don't get it. So the previous verse said that when we are, or said if we are detached from material energy, etc., then we may get the mercy of devotees, and then we can advance. Well, that's a true statement, but not necessarily that simply because you become detached, then automatically the devotees are obliged to give you mercy. So that doesn't make sense. and of course, the devotees also, what do? They avoid, they don't preach to the people who are inimical to bhakti. So if they're gyanis and yogis and say, we don't believe in the Lord and we want to merge into Him and the Lord has a material form or whatever, then they won't preach to them at all. So they won't give them any mercy. So the actual process is that the mercy of the devotees is open to all different types of persons. Maybe a gyani and yogi, if they're not offensive. Maybe a karmi who's materially attached. Maybe someone who's not even new to our ashram system at all. Maybe a sapacha or a malacha or whatever, yavana. And the devotee may give mercy to those persons also, if he feels that he is receptive or whatever, like that, or neutral, then he may give mercy. And then they can start the process of bhakti. And in that process of bhakti, material attachments decrease and eventually are annihilated. So that's the really true perspective. And that's why the acharyas go to the trouble and say, ah, this verse actually doesn't mean this, it means the opposite. First you get the mercy of devotees, then you get your material detachment, whatever like that. So there is a literary ornament, it's alankara. In alankara they have different things. So sometimes they reverse the cause and the effect. The cause is mercy, the effect is detachment from material energy. But then this verse does the opposite. And the material detachment from material energy is the cause, and result is, the effect is, mercy of devotees. So that's a reversal. So there's a literary ornament in which the two things get reversed like this. So that's why they all make this point that actually we have to do this. Jiva Goswami and Vishnu Chakravarti, we have to reverse it. Because it's not a true statement as it stands. And of course, that would also put a great emphasis upon detachment from material world. But we see the opposite is stated in Nectar Devotion. Rupa Goswami clearly states that Vairagya and Jnana are not qualifications for bhakti, and they actually can become very detrimental to bhakti as well. So statements like that, therefore, a statement like this doesn't seem to make too much sense. So that's why they go to this trouble of re-explaining the sentence. So, from this we understand that we cannot always take the words literally. We do have to have some background of understanding of the nature of bhakti, etc., in order to get the right meaning out of things. Otherwise, people can take this statement, first you have to become detached from everything, then you get mercy of devotees. So they will say, we can't take the devotional service, we're too attached. So we'll wait until we get detached. Then we'll take you to the process, then we'll try to get your mercy. So people can give that excuse, no, we won't do bhakti because we're too material attached, and we got to get rid of our material attachments first. So that can be somebody's excuse, but that's not a very valid excuse ultimately. But if we argue on the basis of the statement of Mochakunda, then we can say, yeah, this is what he says, so okay. So we do have to sometimes examine very closely what is stated in Scripture, and we can't take it literally at all times. And so this is the case. The non-literal interpretation is taken, also is supported by literary ornament, alankar. There is a literary ornament in which this happens sometimes. So they justify it in this way. However, if that litter, if there wasn't a litter ornament like that, still, it would be contrary. So therefore, we'd have to re-explain it in terms of other statements in the Bhagavatam and the Nectar Devotion and other works. So therefore, we have to sometimes be careful of the statements and not jump to hasty conclusions. One easy way of doing that, of course, is seeing the overall meaning, which becomes quite evident because of repetition. Certain statements are repeated many times. And those have more prominence than a statement like this that just comes up once or twice. So we get prominence to the repeated statements. So, for instance, in Bhagavatam, we do have statements that you can take impersonally. And that's what Sridhar Swami does. Merge into Brahman, etc. And particularly in 3rd canto and in 11th canto, we'll find statements like that. And even Krishna says that in 11th canto when he speaks to Uddhava. But we know from the general purport and so many other statements that it must be, that cannot be the conclusion, because so many more statements are there that condemn liberation as inferior to bhakti. And in fact, Jiva Goswami goes to the effort of going through every canto and pointing out how there's condemnation of liberation in favor of bhakti, and that ultimately everyone should worship Krishna. So the purport of the whole Bhagavatam is that Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan, and everyone should worship him. That's the prominent theme. So therefore, if we get a statement like merge in Brahman, that's the ultimate, etc., then we have to take it as secondary statement and not take it as the conclusion of everything. So we have to take the primary meaning, which is we derive from a repetition of statements and the beginning statement and conclusion of the Bhagavatam, etc. Which means sometimes we have to think very closely, but then to help us, we have the acharyas who explain everything nicely for us. So that's why we have a parampara system, and we consult the commentaries of the acharyas before we jump to conclusions about things. And this way we don't make any mistakes about the conclusions of the scriptures. So this is a very good example of this, of how detachment is there, but we shouldn't overemphasize it as the primary prerequisite for developing bhakti, etc. So yes, to some degree, we have to give up material attachments, and that's stated in the Bhagavatam. Not too much material attachment, but not too much detachment also. And then we have to have faith at the same time. So this is a favorable situation for developing bhakti. If we have too much attachment, we're more likely or won't have much faith, and we'll do karma yoga instead. If we've got too much detachment and a very little faith, then we'll gravitate towards jnana yoga or asanga yoga for liberation instead. So we have to be not too much detachment, not too much attachment. Of course, Bhagavatam says, in the beginning, and also nectar devotion, yes, some detachment, necessary. So not too much attachment, some detachment, but not excessive. So this makes the process a little bit easier. You can take to bhakti without having to take to jnana and yoga first and perfecting that. At the same time, we cannot simply involve ourselves in karma yoga. We have to be a little bit unattached to that as well. So the process of bhakti, therefore, is a middle path. Not too much attachment, not too much detachment. And in this way, it's quite it's much easier for people to follow. Because it doesn't go to extremes. So here, Mochukunda has expressed the idea that about having, they shouldn't have any attachments. So, and because of that, I've lost my attachments. Therefore, you show your mercy to him. But again, we cannot take that as the ultimate conclusion. The Lord shows mercy. Why? Because of devotion. The Lord is attracted not to detachment, he's attracted to bhakti. The Lord is not interested in jnana, yoga, sankhya, all these different things, but he is attracted to bhakti. Mm-hmm. So if a person has some bhakti, then the Lord becomes very attracted to that. So he's not interested so much in your detachment, but in your bhakti. So the interesting thing is, when we just have a little shraddha and then we begin bhakti, we don't have that much bhakti, very, very little. We have a conviction, and then that conviction helps us to accept scripture, and we begin a little practice. That's a little bit of bhakti. But we do have a large amount of material attraction still. If we just have a little attraction to Krishna, then we must have a big attraction for Maya. Still, the devotees and the Lord are merciful. Even the little faith is there, little mercy. You get some mercy that way. So even with this little bhakti, the Lord is merciful. And in fact, the Lord is merciful to a jnani or a yogi if they have a little bhakti also. And they don't offend the Lord. And it's because of that little bit of bhakti that the Lord gives them liberation. Otherwise they cannot even get liberation. It's because of that bhakti that they get liberation. So even a little bhakti is good. The Lord does something. But the more devotion we have, of course, then the more the Lord responds to that as well. So to the degree that the bhakti increases, the material attachment decreases. So that's why we say first you get the mercy and you perform the bhakti, then the material attachment, because automatically, as we do bhakti, the material attraction should decrease and decrease and decrease. The more bhakti, the less material attraction. We have two types of mamata, or possessiveness. So when we're completely in the material world, yes, completely material possessiveness. We want things for ourselves. Opposite is prema, complete possessiveness of Krishna. And the completely opposite. So if it's completely attraction to material energy, then it's very difficult to do bhakti and to get the mercy, etc. Because, as I said, you have to have not too much material attraction. You're completely attached, very, very difficult. A person will not accept mercy. So, of course, we have the process of accidental bhakti, agata sukriti. So even those who are completely material attached, if they get the agata sukriti, then that form of bhakti decreases slightly, that complete material possessiveness, and they get a little bit of faith in the Lord. When it becomes strong enough, then it's called shraddha, and it becomes evident, that externalized, and the person becomes interested, at least not negative towards devotional things, and he becomes a little interested. So at that point, the material attraction has decreased a little bit. Not too much material attraction. Why? Because of the agata sukriti caused by mercy of devotees. So mercy of devotees comes first, then we get the decrease, then we get the shraddha manifesting. So that shraddha is not simply it's the prerequisite of bhakti itself. And how did that arise? Because of the mercy and the bhakti, accidental bhakti. So it is bhakti itself and mercy which cause the lessening of that material attachment. So once we take to the process of bhakti, then we do bhakti, and decrease of the material mamata, material possessiveness. And simultaneously, we say even before that, more attraction, more mamata for Krishna, until it becomes complete mamata, possessiveness of Krishna, and zero mamata for material things. So that actually is how the process of bhakti works. Detachment from material things takes place automatically with more attachment to Krishna. more possessiveness of Krishna. Yeah? So this is called Sahaj Vairagya, or the easy process of renunciation. Yeah? Otherwise, simply to stop the senses is a very difficult thing. So, the process of bhakti is engage the senses. Not for the self, but for the pleasure of Krishna. So this develops our mamata, or attraction to the Lord, more and more and more. So this is actually a process of transforming the atma. It's nothing to do with the mind, actually, which is material. It's actually the consciousness, and the consciousness comes from the atma. So the atma has complete material possessiveness and maya and ignorance and everything. And then, through faith and then bhakti, develops a little attraction for the Lord. He's not so bahirmukha anymore, and he's turned towards the Lord. And he develops more and more attraction to the Lord, and his material attractions become less and less. So this is actually something which happens in the atma itself, by his choice. So when the atma is completely filled with possessiveness of Krishna, we call that prema. So the definition of prema in nectar devotion is mamata adi sayankata. Very, very strong possessiveness of the Lord. It is there in bhava, but it is much more in prema. And then that means zero attraction for maya. So this is also, we can say, logically explainable. Because, one, the atma by nature is a knower and a doer and has a capacity for bliss. He's a bhokta, enjoyer, capacity for bliss, happiness. He's a knower, a jata, and he's a karta, a doer, by nature. So, therefore, he tries to express that in his material activities of doing things and knowing things and enjoying things in the material world. But it's all under ignorance. Based on rejection of some other entity and concentration on own enjoyment. That's the mamata of the material world. So, bhakti and prema means opposite. We don't think of ourselves. We think of our desire is not for ourselves. Our desire is for pleasing the Lord. So we have desire. We don't give up desire. We don't give up consciousness. We're conscious of the Supreme Lord. And our desire is to please Him. Give Him pleasure. So the center of pleasure shifts from ourself to the Supreme Lord. Let me give some happiness to Krishna. So if we do that, automatically the desire for our own happiness will decrease. So when we have 100% desire for pleasing Krishna, then we don't have any desire for pleasing ourselves. So that's prema. So that is the process of bhakti, increasing that complete dedication to Krishna. Then we're not interested in self at all. So then the result of that is that we get happiness also. Even though we're not looking for our own happiness, by giving all happiness to the Lord, then we also get ananda. So that the capacity of the jiva to be a bhokta, an enjoyer, is fulfilled. He becomes an enjoyer. He experiences the highest bliss. So he's completely satisfied. So in that sense, the process of bhakti is very natural. It fulfills the aspect of jata. We perceive the Lord. We're not just aware of ourself. We're not just aware of our body. And if we're aware of only Brahman, we're not aware of anything except ourself, ultimately, of Atma. So there's no real exercise of consciousness of knowing. He can't be a real jata. He's only self-aware in that state. And he can't do anything if he's in Brahman. And if he does activity in the material world, he creates karma and suffering and ignorance. So, in the spiritual world, we become a doer because we get a spiritual body and we can do things. But those actions are in relation to Supreme Lord for His pleasure. That is prema. And then the result is ananda. So, bhokta, the jiva's capacity as an enjoyer is fulfilled also. So therefore we can say that the process of bhakti is very natural to the jiva, because it fulfills his aspect as karta and gata and bhokta.
Thank you very much for that very deep class, Maharaj. I have two questions. One is about what you said initially, that by association of devotees, one develops detachment as a consequence of association of devotees. In the case of Muchukunda, he is a person who was benedicted with a blessing to be able to see Krishna face to face. He is known as a great king, conqueror, and he had an association of demigods. They used him for fighting.
Yeah.
They gave him a material bone, and he didn't want it. He said, "I want to sleep," etc., etc. There's no specific instance of him actually shown that he actually got bhakti from a devotee or anything. It's just all speculation. But then it says that he'll get to see Krishna and he got that blessing. Because I saw when Krishna appeared, he said, "Who are you?" And Krishna described himself. So it looks like it was the first time and he got to see Krishna. And he got blessed. And it happened instantly. There was no instance of him actually getting blessing from a devotee.
How they get so qualified.
He became very qualified by the blessing of the great saint to be able to see Krishna. And he got to see Krishna. And then only bhakti started, maybe. Can I say that?
Well, he also comes in an illustrious line, probably, I would suppose, from Manu eventually, isn't it?
Yes.
In the Manu's dynasty. Who was it?
Manu's is in the Ikshvaku dynasty.
In the Ikshvaku dynasty, yes. So, therefore, the Manus are actually vibhutis of the Lord. They're empowered by the Lord, like Devatas. They're empowered to spread dharma and bhakti. So therefore the lines themselves by their nature have bhakti and dharma mixed. They'll usually think of the dharma aspect. The kings are there to establish a varnashram system and rule over the kingdom nicely. But they are, as in the case of Ambarish and Dhruva and Priyavrata, so many of them are great devotees as well. So obviously they got some privilege arranged by the Supreme Lord for bhakti as well. So most of them would have bhakti. We have a few extraordinary examples like King Vena, who came in the line. He was completely opposite, but there was a story behind that also. But generally, we do have bhakti simply because of the environment they're in and the line they're in, that somehow they have developed bhakti as the kings traditionally were devotees. So it may have not been the greatest bhakti, but at least it was there. But then we can say that that blessing was also a mercy in one sense, that he got the blessing that he would meet the Supreme Lord, whatever like that. So that's sort of mercy also. Other details we really don't know. But obviously in order to meet the Lord, there has to be some sort of qualification, unless it is completely kripa, mercy. Like in giving mercy to Putana and the demons, that's mercy, obviously. They don't have any qualification. It's the Lord Himself. But because He was in a line of Manu, there is some qualification right there for like getting to see the Lord.
The other question is the question of doing. Bhakti is not coming because we are doing sadhana. It's not a question of doing, we're just speaking about. In the spiritual world, you can do with your spiritual body. In the material world, we are doing sadhana bhakti
with our material body.
And it is not guaranteed that simply by your sadhana alone, you will get the bhakti. But because of your desire to get bhakti, you will actually awaken the latent bhakti in you.
Well, what
am I just saying that? Because the doing is not producing the bhakti. The karma of sadhana is not producing
it. It's a combination. The definition of bhakti, one is, of course, the for sadhana bhakti is kriti sadhya. Engage the senses. But then we see that many people in the world engage their senses. Obviously, they're not engaging in Krishna. So you have to engage them in serving Krishna or in doing Krishna conscious activities. But even a person in the material world can engage the senses in doing something for the Lord. But he may not call that bhakti. He may be imitating, he may be a false person, he may be someone. So we don't call that bhakti. So the other qualification, other definition, of course, is this ani abhilashta shunya jnana karma janavratam anukalena krishna dosilam. So that also has to be there. The two things have to be there. So the foundational one is the Krishna Anusilanam, favorable attitude towards Krishna, right, the desire to please Him with the Aranya desires, and we try to cultivate that. So that's the initial beginning of bhakti, definition of bhakti. And then in sadhana bhakti, we engage the senses to do that. So the two things are there. So that Anukulam Krishna Anusilanam, that ultimately we can say is the orientation of the jiva, that he's willing to give up material desires and to try to please the Lord. Based on that, he engages the senses. And this is that whole thing is called bhakti. And when we do that, then that this Krishna Anusilanam, it starts out a little by little. This begins to grow and grow in the jiva. So it becomes more eager to serve the Lord favorably. More eager to serve the Lord favorably. And develops and develops and develops as he engages the senses more on the basis of that initial favorability and faith and whatever. So the two things are simultaneously going on, the internal development and the external activities. And they support each other. It's not just internal, we can't do that because we're not, that happens in prema. Okay, you don't have to do the external ones, since internally you're serving in your spiritual body, but here we have to start out with the external. So that's sadhana bhakti, engage the external activities, but it's based upon the internal, at least that internal attitude of favorability to the Lord has to be there. So that's the actual bhakti. It's not just external, it's internal and external combined in sadhana. In prema, it could be all internal.
How do you get that internal favorable attitude?
Okay, well, it starts with
the cause for
the shraddha. Shraddha is the first, the inclination and acceptance of the Lord internally in the atma, that we accept the Lord and we're willing to follow scriptures. So that's shraddha. Where does that come from? Accidental mercy. Because we don't have any shraddha, we're going to avoid devotees and everything. So the only way we can get it is accidental. So agyata sukriti is the cause of shraddha in most cases. And that's just a sudden outpouring of mercy like Narada Muni or some of them, and they can go quickly. But otherwise, many, many lifetimes of agyata sukriti, unconscious.
Shraddha is the cause of favorable attitude.
Yeah. Shraddha gives rise to bhakti, that initial definition. And then that gives rise to sadhana.
Regarding this, Maharaj's first question, regarding this, Muchukunda got mercy, that Garbhamani gave benediction to Muchukunda. Because we know that, this devotee has a power to reveal Krishna, even to give blessing that, yes, I'm blessing you, I'm so happy with the service that you can see Krishna. So we can say that here a devotee's mercy is more important than even Krishna's mercy.
Yeah, if he blessed him, yeah.
So I think
that was the initial blessing, we can say. Then why did he bless him? He must have seen some good qualities in him.
So
he might, and it's not material qualities, obviously. He blesses him to see Krishna because he has some spiritual qualities, obviously.
Because he's meeting the Gargamuni, definitely he has some good qualities. Otherwise, how can he get mercy of, how can he meet the Gargamuni? It's not so easy to meet the Gargamuni also. My question is that you are saying that the materialistic people, the thing that let us first enjoy, once we be frustrated from the material world, then we will take the devotional life. Normally, they say like this. Maybe this statement supporting this their statement. Let us first enjoy, once we will be frustrated and when we will not have any desire to enjoy, then we will take up a devotional process.
Well, that's on the premise that after we enjoy, we become detached automatically. Yeah, so to some extent true, because but it has to be done in a certain way. You have to follow the Varnashram system. And then you can gradually elevate yourself from tamagun to sattvagun. Then when you're sattvic, you start giving up enjoyment. If you don't follow that system, no, it's not going to work. You just enjoy, 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 and life after life, you enjoy, 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 and you haphazardly enjoy tamagun, 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 and you may sink down to lower species of life and whatever. So this unrestricted enjoyment is not going to eventually lead to sattva. The only way it could is that you get so much suffering in tamagun that you get so frustrated that then you may choose to do something different, but then you have to get some mercy of devotees or something, some enlightenment. Otherwise, you're going to go further and further into tamagun.
You see the main example in Srimad Bhagavatam, like Maharaj Yati. He was also enjoying so much. When he got frustrated, then he take up the devotional service. That means this process is supporting the same thing. But even Narada also first, you know, tried to instruct him, but he couldn't accept it because he was so much inclined to sense enjoyment. So means this statement supported, you know, their occupation, even before that, you know, that people are so much with the Varnashram system. You know, let us first enjoy because the sannyasa comes the last only, it's not the beginning. So what I feel that maybe because of this, you know, previous people are following the Varnashram system, so this statement is given that, you know, let us first enjoy, that is one will be frustrated, then you can take up the different life.
Yeah, no, so it's partially correct, it's not completely correct, that's all. It doesn't automatically lead to bhakti. Simply detachment is not automatically bhakti, and material attachment does not automatically lead to detachment. If we have a system, okay, Varnashram system, gradually we become detached. If we become a coal and we take sannyas, okay, we become detached. But even that, we may not become devotees after that unless we get mercy.
Second question is, you were saying that like jnana and vairagya, normally to perform the devotional services, normally we have to follow except minimum jnana and vairagya. We need this. And it's also accepted, you know, in the beginning of the devotional life.
But a little bit favorable in the beginning.
But later reject it.
Well, because if we are too attached to them, it'll lead us to become gyanis and yogis instead of bhaktas.
So here this jnana and vairagya, both are, which jnana and which vairagya is explained actually? Is it a jnana about the atma or something else?
Yeah. Knowledge of soul and ultimately Brahman. That jnana is a little bit okay in the beginning. I'm not the body, etc. That part of jnana, okay. But if we want to merge into Brahman, then that becomes unfavorable. And vairagya, we detach ourselves from everything. And then we want to give up all activities, so we give up activities of bhakti also. So that makes it not favorable anymore. Stop thinking about anything beautiful. Stop thinking of the form of the Lord. Stop chanting the Lord's name. That's vairagya. Stop everything. So that becomes unfavorable.
So what kind of vairagya do we have to follow here in the beginning? What kind of this?
Detachment, not too much material attached. Some detachment.